Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The update comes from One Bills Live today as we take a look at what's going on around the National Football League. Very quiet around the Buffalo Bills, to be sure, but NFL executives say they plan to start their 2020 season on time this September. That came about after yesterday's conference call among NFL owners. Despite the global coronavirus pandemic that shut down sports around the world, the expectation, according to league executive president Jeff Pasch, is that they will start on time. Am I certain of that? Pasch said, not certain I'll be here tomorrow. He was asked whether the league is making contingency plans for a later start or for games to be played in neutral or empty stadiums. Pasch said the league's first models indicate that that might be likely. The April 23rd through the 25th draft remains on schedule, the format not yet finalized. Yesterday, NFL owners formally approved a plan to expand the postseason to 14 games, or 14 teams rather, beginning with the 2020 season. The new format changes prior league practice in two ways. Three wildcard teams per conference up from two, and the number two seed in each conference will host the new number seven, with only the one seed having a first-round bye. Cleveland Browns have signed veteran defensive end Adrian Claiborne to a two-year deal. He'll make $5.75 million over 2 years, a max of $6.75 million with incentives. He's 31 years old. Claiborne played for the Atlanta Falcons last year. Patriots center David Andrews missed all of last season with blood clots in his lungs. Now the Patriots player preparing to return, 27-year-old, said he has tried to fight through the blood clots that left him hospitalized in August, said he should be good to go this year. And the Wimbledon championships have been canceled due to the pandemic, according to the All England Cup. The first time Wimbledon has been canceled since World War II, the first time since the tournament began in 1877. The event will not be played during peacetime. Wimbledon had been scheduled to be played between June 29 and July 12. The All England Club considered a variety of alternatives, including postponement. It decided that cancellation was the best option. And there you go. That's the update from One Bills Live. John Murphy and Steve Tasker getting ready for hour number three. Happy to have you with us, Steve. You ready to go? Hour number three? You
got another one left? Yeah,
let's go. Let's go with our guest. A former agent in the NFL. He is now the CBS Sports NFL contract and salary cap expert. Happy to have Joel Corey on the line with us. Hello, Joel. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Good to talk about something other than the current pandemic. Hey, you might be able to direct us in the right direction here. Steve and I, watching the Bills free agent signings, a lot of one-year deals especially, a couple of two-year deals. Obviously, there's a benefit to teams. Why are more teams doing that, though? And is that, in fact, a trend in the NFL, one- and two-year deals? What do you think?
Yeah, well, shorter deals is a trend generally. Players, at least some of the high-end ones this year, wanted shorter deals, no more than 3 years as well, just because the expectation is a salary cap is going to increase significantly. Once there's a 17th game, the player percentage will go up, new TV deals and gambling money's in. And for the Bills, particularly if you're going to sign a couple of older players like a Josh Norman, you don't want them signed into longer-term deals. You want to have the flexibility to retool your roster on a go-forward basis, especially since Tom Brady's no longer in the division and the Bills appear to be the odds-on favorite to win the AFC East.
Well, you've got some other considerations. We voted on a CBA just a few weeks ago. Seems like a lifetime ago now. Now that has been brought into question as well with the language that was changed ostensibly by the union as to what the players actually voted on. What's the status of that, and how does that affect the business side of the NFL going forward?
Well, I'm assuming the NFLPA and NFL are going to look at that as just a minor nuisance. It doesn't appear that anything was materially changed. I think that Eric Reid is going to have a hard time prevailing in his attempts to unravel the CBA.
Joe Corey, our guest. Hey, Joe, what do you think of the new CBA? It seemed it was pretty much weighted towards the teams. Maybe not, though. What do you think of the new CBA, and who gets the advantage based on this new agreement?
Well, compared to the 2011 CBA, it's great, but that's a low bar to clear. I'm not necessarily sure the players exploited their leverage fully for the 17th game that the league so desperately wanted. I'm not overly enthusiastic about the revenue split stalling once you get to the 17th game and doesn't have a chance to really increase during the latter parts of the CBA since this agreement runs through the 2030 season. And that's another issue in and of itself. Why are you signing a CBA which basically runs for 11 years? No player outside of Tyron Smith signs a contract that long, and CBAs and other leagues have an opt-out if they're really more than 5, 6, 7 years. So the fact that you have gotten labor peace for that long is great for the NFL, and I think that's over time going to prove to be something that the players will regret.
There's also been some talk, Joel, as to the fact that nobody can do physicals, nobody can travel to physically sign their contracts, and it's all pending all the things that have to happen when you are able to get together physically. Is there any thought or any concern? I know it's been brought up by some people that none of these contracts are binding until they are signed. So, for instance, a team could back out of a free agent contract they've already agreed to if the draft comes and goes and they haven't got that contract signed.
Yeah, that's a real consideration. What we did see before, you basically had a lockdown in most places across the country, that there were some independent doctors where people were located that would do physicals, which would substitute for the team doctor doing the physical. And I know there are some agents that really haggled with teams over the language, particularly on signing bonuses, on because they're contingent on passing a physical, on what would qualify for a player to get paid the signing bonus. Because what your bigger concern was that if he didn't pass the physical, then you potentially could be bound to a contract where you forfeit the signing bonus because you didn't satisfy the conditions, but the remainder of the contract stayed in effect. But we saw with Michael Brockers that if a team wants to get out of a contract, they can by essentially failing a guy on a physical.
With Joe Corey, a former NFL player agent, I want to ask you, Joel, about a particular contract, the Bills deal with Stephon Diggs. They assume Minnesota's old deal with him. 4 years left, $11 or $12 million per season. Yes, he's underpaid compared to the top receivers in the game, but some people thought that as soon as the trade was made, the Bills might have gotten to work on an extension of that deal. I don't know. I think that's premature. What do you think?
No, you're right. It is premature. The ink's barely dried on the extension. It was a 5-year extension that he signed, and he's got 4 new years left. So he's played 1 new year. Yeah, it is below market for what he did last year, but at the time when he signed the deal, he was considered at best 1B to Adam Thielen's 1A. The fact that Thielen was hurt last year gave him more opportunity. He is clearly a number one receiver with the Bills, but you don't tear up a deal when there are 4 years left on it or renegotiate it. We're going to see if the Cardinals do something with DeAndre Hopkins. He has 3 years left. There is a precedent for doing something with 3 years left. Antonio Brown had something done with 3 years left on his deal for his trade to Oakland. Never played a down on that deal. But 4 years, that's a bit much to be starting a deal on renegotiating a deal, particularly when you barely played on the deal.
I got to ask you a little bit about the trade market. Certainly, Yannick Ngakoue is on the trade block. We've heard also guys like Andy Dalton would be on the trade block. A.J. Green was franchised because he's unhappy in Cincinnati. And, you know, there's also guys at those positions that are out in free agency, which probably undermines the ability of teams or undermines their desire to go out and trade for guys like that. What about the trade market now and these last few maybe big name free agents that are still out there, like Jadeveon Clowney and the like, and the guys who are on the block for trades? How do you see this playing out under the current pandemic, uncertain preseason coming up?
Clowney may end up going back to Seattle on a one-year deal because he's a guy where you really – the physical is going to be important because he had a microfracture when he was with Houston that had the core injury he played through last year. So the medicals are going to make you more comfortable if you want to commit the huge money he's looking for. And last year, my understanding was he wanted to be in the $20 million per year club for non-quarterbacks. I doubt that's changed. So his best bet may be signing the one-year deal with Seattle and then going out and finally having a double-digit sack season and going from there. You have two franchise players who are the biggest trade candidates, both defensive linemen, Ngui, as you mentioned, and also Chris Jones, because I'm skeptical that Kansas City can pay two pass rushers or defensive linemen over $20 million per year, then also pay Patrick Mahomes the biggest quarter contract we've ever seen in league history. And you've got a glut of quarterbacks available, which hurts Andy Dalton. That's part of the reason that Cam Newton wasn't traded and was released. He had the physical issues as well. So I don't know who's going to trade for Andy Dalton. Joe Flacco got released. Newton was released. So I can see Cincinnati kind of squatting on him for a while. It didn't surprise me A.J. Green was franchised because he didn't play it down last year. But I really wouldn't want Andy Dalton there if I'm bringing in Joe Burrow, because if Burrow struggles like a lot of young quarterbacks do, the temptation would be to play him as opposed to letting Burrow take his lumps. So I think eventually Dalton gets cut.
Hey, you mentioned Jacksonville and Yannick Ngakoue, who it would seem they're ready to trade him. And you mentioned that you think the trade for Frank Clark is pretty much a model of what Jacksonville should request. Tell me how that works, Joel. What do you think? How do you think it will work in this case?
Well, Jacksonville is also looking at how they were patient last year with Jalen Ramsey and got a king's ransom. So they're not going to give Ngakoue away. What they're going to do most likely, and the timing is probably right before the draft. That's when Frank Clark was traded. He went for basically a first and a second. And you had DeForest Buckner recently go from San Francisco to Indianapolis for a first. So somewhere along those lines will probably be the range of compensation. What you don't want to do is do what Bill O'Brien did. Now, there's that July 15th deadline for franchise players to sign long-term deals. You don't try to trade a franchise player once the possibility of signing a long-term deal is done, because it basically becomes a fire sale for the team, because nobody's going to give you something significant when they can't sign them to a long-term deal and it's a potential one-year rental. So I expect any trade to be done probably right before the draft.
How do you think the current situation with the pandemic and all that, what's your gut feeling about how much affected the offseason will be and subsequently the regular season? What's your gut feeling on what how the schedule is going to work out?
The offseason is going to, to me, mimic what happened in 2011 when we had to lock out. There was nothing until the lockout ended, and basically everyone first got together for training camp. So it would not surprise me if you have no off-season program, and the first time you see teams fully together in one place will be whenever they report to training camp end of July, early August. That is if we get everything under control so life gets back to normal around that time. If not, then we could see a delay of the NFL season starting. I think they're being a little overly optimistic in terms of their projections, particularly having fans at stadiums, because I'm not going to an NFL game if we have them this year until I know that the person who'd be sitting next to me doesn't have the coronavirus. I'm not putting myself in that position, and I'm sure a lot of other people probably feel the same way.
I wonder, with that in mind, when does the NFL have to alter their formula? I mean, they say they're pressing ahead with a full regular season. Is there a drop-dead date when they'd have to figure out maybe another plan, do you think, Joel?
Well, I think we're a good couple of months away from having a drop-dead date. But we've seen so far it's business as usual for the NFL. Some people thought that free agency should have been delayed. There have been a lot of voices that they should delay the draft. I'm very skeptical that they're going to be games with fans because the NBA is intent on trying to resume their season. And from everything Adam Silver's been indicating, it won't be in front of fans.
Well, the NFL went ahead and had their free agency time. They kept that on schedule. They're going to keep the draft on schedule. But do you think there has been a significant effect on the players who were signed, the players who were not signed? Do you think that the teams are shying away from big contracts, maybe from the owner's perspective, because they don't want to pay out, you know, to exaggerate to make a point, they don't want to pay out a $20 million signing bonus for a guy who probably who may not play in 2020 because the schedule doesn't happen? I mean, how much of an effect has all this had on what actually did happen?
No, I don't think it had much of an effect because the first wave of free agency was like it's always been. It was a seller's market, and then once that ended, it quickly became a buyer's market, and if you didn't get your money, then you're probably not going to get it. Jameis Winston looks like he's going to be a backup someplace. And as I said earlier, Clowney's probably signing a one-year deal. You saw a guy like Todd Gurley who got cut. He quickly signed a one-year deal for, I think it's $5 to $6 million. The contract hasn't been finalized totally yet because of the lack of a physical. But it always stands that if you don't get your money in free agency in the first couple of days, odds are you're not going to get it. The franchise tag players will get paid, the ones who do sign long-term deals. So those will be the biggest deals that come in, and then a couple of the extensions, like Laremy Tunsil. So the Texans have started negotiating with him. He's got all the leverage, so he might as well just hand Laremy Tunsil a blank contract and have him fill it out.
Right.
I saw that tweet about Tunsil, and that's what you said. I think it was yesterday, Joel. Everybody's looking at how Bill O'Brien may have blown the trade that was made, but the Tunsil deal doesn't look so good 10 months later, does it?
No, because what you should do as a team is if you give up significant assets, and the Texans gave up more than any non-quarterback has gone for in a trade outside of Khalil Mack in this century, you need to get the deal done at that time. Because if you don't do that, you basically hand the player the hammer. And we've seen that Dallas is suffering from that as well. They had a whole season and a half to get something done with Amari Cooper and didn't. And if they had gotten that deal done with him before Michael Thomas and Julio Jones signed extensions, he's not a $20 million per year player. The moral of the story generally is the longer you wait for good to great player, the more it's going to cost you. And particularly when you give up a ton of stuff to get a guy, you almost have to do a deal with him, so you're at the player's mercy.
I got to ask you, too, as this offseason comes down to a close, it's very rare, but it happened this offseason. We had a ton of quarterbacks out on the free agent market. You know, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Cam Newton is now out there. Jameis Winston's now out there. There are more quarterbacks than there seems to be teams that are looking for a quarterback. How do you think Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, what's the landing spot for those two guys?
I've never seen anything like this in terms of supply and demand for quarterbacks. Usually if you get one quarterback who is a quality starter out there, that's a rarity. But to have basically a smorgasbord where it's like, well, I can go old guy, I can go guy in his prime, I can go guy used to be a starter that was a backup. It was basically whatever you wanted, you could pretty much find this year. The obvious landing spot for Cam Newton is the Chargers, but they seem to be content with Tyrod Taylor as their starter. I'd take a healthy Cam Newton over Tyrod Taylor 8 days in the week, even though only seven in a week. Jameis, I think he probably needs to find a backup spot where there's a vulnerable starter. I'm not sure that's all that available. Washington seems to be comfortable with Dwayne Haskins, and they traded for Kyle Allen, who didn't look all that good in Carolina last year. If he can't find one of those, maybe he goes someplace where he can sit behind an older starter for a year and pick his brain and hopefully learn something called turnover avoidance, and Pittsburgh might be a spot for him.
Yeah. Joel, I got one more for you, and it's kind of a long-term question about the Buffalo Bills. Steve and I, my partner here, we've talked a lot in recent weeks about an apparent Bill strategy to build a good team while Josh Allen is on his rookie contract. He won't be there forever. How do you transition into the next phase? Say Josh Allen's doing well, you want to keep him around, you want to reward him with a good market-level contract. And what's the model for doing that the right way or the wrong way? It seems to me, we talked about this, Steve and I, the wrong way might be to do what the Rams did, get yourself in trouble that way. The right way maybe to do what the Seattle Seahawks have done. What do you think?
Yeah, Seattle's the ideal situation in terms of taking advantage of the window of opportunity you have when your quarterback is at his cheapest. And you guys did a great job of cleaning up the cap with all the dead money a couple of years ago, so you had a ton of cap room this year. You haven't gone hog wild spending it, so you still have cap room available that you can carry over to next year. I think it's like about 23 right now on how much more of that you're going to spend. I would get your young cornerback White done sooner rather than later. I'd want to get him done before Jalen Ramsey, because Jalen Ramsey is in the same situation as Laremy Tunsil. No deal done. He gave up significant assets for a trade, so he's going to dramatically reset the cornerback market, which has already taken a jump this year with Darius Slay and Byron Jones. Nobody's going to confuse Josh Allen with a young Jim Kelly right now, so the jury's still out on him. You just have to hope that he's not the second coming of Marcus Mariota and he develops into your long-term quarterback.
Yeah, we're not worried about that, but I see why you say that. Hey, Joel, thanks. Stay healthy. Thanks for coming on the show.
You too. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Joel.
Joel Corey, a former sports agent and does NFL contracts and salary cap writing for CBSSports.com and others. It's funny, Steve, the more, you know, you talk to a lot of people, we have over the recent months especially, the wide variance of opinions on Josh Allen. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not saying everybody has to, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, but it's interesting that some people have more doubts about him than we do, certainly.
He is the most you'd be hard-pressed to think of, and I'm trying to think of one now off the top of my head, of a more polarizing player in the league, good or bad, right?
Yeah.
Certainly Bills fans, and there are those who pre-draft called Josh a great player and was going to be a great player. You and I have seen his steady progress over the first 2 years, full years of his career. But yet there's still those people who do not want to be wrong about him being a bust. He still polarizes a lot of people, and there are still those out there who don't believe in him. I think you and I both have high hopes for him. I got a lot of faith in his ability to improve and his direction of improvement. Certainly he's not a finished product, but man, oh man, is he a different guy today than he was at the start of this last season. And he was a different guy at the start of this last season than he was at the start of the season before that. He's come so far, and I see more in him. And so I'm fully happy to, you know, give the guy the keys to the car and trust him to drive it. I'm there. Now, certainly I know there are better quarterbacks out there, sure. But man, oh man, he's still headed up, and we can't see his top end yet.
That's right. That's the way I feel. All right, we got a break here. When we come back, I'm going to talk to the folks from Connect Life about a blood drive, a very important blood drive in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We'll talk about that when we come back right here on the show. The show continues. One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. We're coming to you from our homes once again. We're radio only, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasch along with John Murphy. Murphy just popped off the internet for just a minute. He'll be back on to join us. We're about to be joined by Amanda Farrell, Director of Blood Donor Recruitment for Connect Life. You might have heard it by its former name, Units. They are a group, a nonprofit that works in eight counties and gets blood donations. You can imagine with the current pandemic situation around our country, it has been a rough time for people who are trying to do this type of work. We are pleased. Now Murph is back on the line with us. Murph, I just introduced Amanda Farrell, and Amanda's on the line with us. Amanda, can you hear us? John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in One Bills Live. How are you?
I can hear you. Good afternoon. How are you?
We're doing really well.
I got to start by finding out.
Well, yes, I got to be honest with you. I didn't know you were coming on today until yesterday, and I'd already made my appointment. I went in and donated blood in the, I think it's the Orchard Park office there on Union Road. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I went in last night and was well taken care of. It was nice. It was well run. I was pretty happy. Give us an idea of how sharp the drop off perhaps has been since this pandemic hit us.
Yeah, you know, since it hit us really, I guess just 2 short weeks ago, though sometimes it feels like 2 months, right? We have had from that time through the end of April about 85 blood drives canceled, which is roughly about 2,000 units of blood that we would have potentially lost from those. So, you know, with kind of the cooperation and in support of our media partners, we've been able to really reach out. And in true Buffalo fashion, our Western New York community has really answered the call and has helped to make sure that we have currently a stable blood supply at our hospitals.
What are some of the things you're doing to get people more aware? Certainly everybody's kind of sitting at home. Most of them, you know, watching TV at some point throughout the day. Is that most of what you're doing, or are you trying to get to maybe some local politicians that with press conferences, that kind of thing, to get the message out? Well, what's the strategy?
Yeah, I think a little bit of everything. You know, we really need to educate people on the fact that donating blood is safe and it's needed. You know, having a ready blood supply is essential to any disaster preparedness or pandemic. So I think really educating folks, letting people know the steps we're taking to make sure that things are clean and safe, things like requiring appointments so we can adequately space out donors, as well as, you know, I think a variety of ways, you all with the media, social media, as well as we've had some great print partners in our outlying areas too.
Hey, Amanda, what makes this, I'm sure, difficult for you and your group at Connect Life is this April 1st just started today, National Donate Life Month, right? And you're still going to honor that. You're still going to observe that this year.
It is, yes. A lot of that will be virtual. And, you know, with the fact that, as you said, people are sitting at home, everyone is definitely on social media. So we can celebrate and honor Donate Life Month virtually, or you can celebrate it, you know, in person by making an appointment to come and donate blood as well.
Now, how many locations do you have? What precautions should people take before they come in? Is there anything special they need to do to prepare? And how easy is it just kind of maybe to show up and donate blood? Is that possible? You know, give us the kind of the ins and outs of what it takes.
Sure. So, you know, at this point in time, we are requiring people to make appointments. And that's, again, for our staff and donor health and safety. We want to make sure we have enough time to clean and disinfect every surface in between our donors, as well as space out enough so that we can maintain that 6 feet of social distance between our draw chairs and our donor wait time. So we do know that a lot of our, from feedback from our donors, a lot of our appointments really up and through next week are full. So, you know, sometimes it's challenging. Folks want to do something now to make an impact, but we really encourage you to look out into the next 2 weeks to several weeks. You know, collecting blood is going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And we really want people to consider, you know, whenever they want to get out of their house in the next several weeks, think of us and come on and get out to donate blood.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of this, Amanda, but you probably do have to have a regular sustaining number of donations every month, regardless of whether it's, you know, April or whenever. And when it's interrupted by something like the virus like this or something else, it throws you guys off schedule, right?
Yeah, you know, blood is not a renewable resource. It has a shelf life of 42 days. So we need a constant collection to make sure that blood is on the shelf for our hospitals. You know, if that blood isn't on the shelf, all the medical personnel, all the technology in the world is no good if we don't have that blood on the shelf.
Well, what's next on, and how is it going? Is this going to, I hope this helps to get more people in, but like how many, I mean, for an 8-county area like you serve, how many units are we talking about that actually go out and are used? Not that go bad, that you don't use it, you know, in mm-hmm. case it, you know, it, you don't have a run on that kind of thing, but how much do you take in and how much is needed by the medical community?
Yeah, so, you know, that's important for folks to know because it's really a huge volume. And like I said, it's not a renewable resource. So Connect Life supplies about 80% of the blood needed by all the hospitals in Western New York. And everything that we collect does stay here locally. So we supply our hospitals just over 35,000 units of red blood cells on a yearly basis. And that's throughout the year. So it really is a huge number. And when a virus like this comes up or something that really impacts people not donating, you know, just a few days to a week's time span and not being able to collect could be detrimental for our hospitals.
Amanda Farrell, our guest, Connect Life's Director of Blood Donor Registration. Amanda, it's important to note that you do this by appointment only now, right? Even all your locations appear open, but you got to make an appointment to donate blood now, right?
We do, and we encourage people again, to check our website for eligibility. They can always call our office too, but we really require that people feel healthy and well. You know, if you are healthy, this is something you can do to give back in this time where kind of everyone is a little uncertain and uneasy. Donating blood is a really safe way that you can help to give back and help to make sure that our community stays healthy.
And I guess another important thing, well, it's important in some respects, but you got a special donation coming up a week from today at Big Ditch Brewing Company in Buffalo, right?
We do. So that's been really great, too. You know, it's not only our awesome blood donors, but it's, again, like I said, our Western New York community in true fashion. We have some really great, I guess you would say, non-traditional partners to our blood bank. We've got Big Ditch Brewing. We've been working with Hamburg Brewing, as well as Crosby's Convenience Stores and some other places where if they are open or they do have space, you know, they're ready to open their doors to us and encourage people to come out and donate blood there.
Thanks so much, Amanda. Good luck with the blood drive. I hope we can get through this difficult time, and I hope this helps.
Thanks so much.
Amanda Farrell is Connect Life's Director of Blood Donor Registration. It's amazing to see how many things are affected by the coronavirus and the quarantine that you never think of. I wouldn't have given that any thought, but it's a big issue, right, with blood donations.
Yeah, with everybody staying home, they kind of cancel doctor's appointments, you cancel the haircut appointment, you know, barbers are closed, you cancel all these appointments, and you never think about making an appointment to go out so that you can, you know, help out the medical industry. Listen, the medical industry needs us now as much as ever, so anything we can do to help at any level, this isn't so much about the coronavirus as it is about keeping everybody else who needs blood up and running as well. So it all counts, and I'm hoping it helps.
Let's play a little NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Are you ready? Here we go. True or false, the 2020 NFL draft will set a television ratings record. True or false? Boy, I'm inclined to say false, Steve. I think because it won't have the, you know, the flash and dash and the excitement and the players all dressed up in the green room, and they were going to have players on a boat crossing the moat there at the Bellagio Hotel. They were going to make it a real Las Vegas spectacle. That won't be the case this year. I was inclined to think it probably won't have the ratings. On the other hand, people aren't going out anymore. In 3 weeks, you don't think that'll be ended either. Maybe there will be more eyeballs watching the draft this year. What do you think?
I'm going to say true. I think it's exactly what you just said. People are going to be ready for something live on television that is not a press conference. And I think no matter what it looks like, people will check it out just because they know it's going to look completely different than the years we've seen it in the past, both football fans and non-football fans. People will be curious to see how it's handled. And I think that curiosity, along with the huge interest the league generates anyway, I think because of all that, it may indeed set records. I'm sure it will be, yeah, I mean, it'll be the highest rated TV program of the year so far, probably. So yeah, I'm thinking it probably will set some records.
You know, it always is the highest rated sports program in the spring, more than NBA playoffs, certainly more than hockey playoffs. But I think it has the appeal. The draft has the appeal as a television product of being real live TV. You know, it's kind of like one of those bachelor shows or bachelorette shows, right? You're gonna get picked. It's kind of it'll be different because it won't have as I said, the players there. But I think, look, I'm sure some smart minds at ESPN and NFL Network are coming up with a plan now to make it interesting to watch. I think it could be pretty good.
I think it will. Certainly you and I are going to be riveted to it. We got no, what are we going to do? Something different? You know, we're going to have plans that night? No, we're going to be there watching it, and we won't be alone. But I think there's a ton of people who will be, for one, thirsting for something other to watch. I mean, how much can you binge watch programs without having something new and fresh and different and live? And two, the fact that your team that you follow is going to be doing something that day, with the exception of the Bills who traded their first round pick. And for the third thing is we're going to be deep into this, and people are going to be in a different spot than they are now. And I am anticipating it's more of a hungrier spot than it is now. To watch something of this nature other than press conferences and news and newscasts. So I just think I don't want to go out on the limb and say it might be Super Bowl kind of numbers, but yeah, it might be. Might be Super Bowl kind of numbers.
NFL draft coming up 3 weeks from tomorrow is round one. All right, NFL true or false. Chiefs-Ravens will be the best rivalry in 2020. Let me think about that for a minute. Will it, in fact, be the best rivalry next year, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens? Could be. It'll be one of the better ones. But I don't know. There's other rivalries you'd have to keep an eye on, aren't there? I mean, I think the 49ers have their hands full with a couple of teams in the NFC West. Those would be big rivalries. I don't know. What about the Bills-Patriots? I think that'll be a good rivalry, too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of two teams. You know, what comes to mind for me would be Chargers-Rams. I don't even know if they probably won't even face each other, but Chargers-Rams might be in a new stadium if they played. I don't think they do. So that's kind of off the table. Las Vegas, do they lose some of their luster or gain some because they're in a new stadium in a new city with Denver coming in like that? Are they closer to Arizona or further away from Arizona than they used to be in Oakland? I think they're pretty close. Arizona, LA, or Las Vegas could become a real rivalry in the desert. I don't know, though. For the current state of the NFL with Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes, the last two MVPs, I'll tell you what, I'm going to watch that game. That's for sure. So I might have to say true just for this year.
All right. That'll do it. NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Got a break here. We're coming back. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Time now for What Have We Learned from Today's Show, brought to you by Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? We had Sam Monson on from Pro Football Focus. He says the Bills wide receiver group is the best in the NFL with the acquisition of Stephon Diggs. Here's Sam Monson.
Yeah, I mean, I like the guys that they had brought in a year ago, Beasley and John Brown. I think that they were getting the right type of receiver. And then you bring in a Stephon Diggs, and it just catapults that group to a completely different level. And, you know, I'd always kind of thought that Stephon Diggs was a very good player anyway. And just from diving into the research and his tape to do this article, if anything, my opinion of him only went up. I mean, he is good at everything you need to be a wide receiver. And if you look at his production, the sort of the relative lack of production compared with, you know, superstars like Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins or the guys at the very top of the NFL list, I don't think the reason that he's not at that level is anything due to him. I think it's just because he's been in a run-first offense in Minnesota.
Well, there you go. That's Sam Monson. I don't know if – I'm not saying they don't have the best wide receiver group, but that's the kind of a wide-sweeping statement, Steve Tasker, that I think is made when you're bored and you're trying to find something to write. You know what
well,
I mean?
He did, trying to find something to write. He said top three. I mean, he did acknowledge that maybe Tampa Bay's got a better 1-2 punch than the Bills. But when you drop it down and go to either Cole Beasley or John Brown behind Steph Diggs and Cole Beasley or John Brown, the top three of the guys in Buffalo, you'd be hard-pressed to do it. And he also made a good point about this. The strength of those three guys in Beasley, Brown, and Diggs is their ability to get separation. And for a quarterback like Josh Allen, that speaks volumes about the Bills' desire to give him guys that make the windows bigger for him to fit it in. So I think it's a great point by him. Certainly, they've got a lot to prove before anybody else is going to say that other than Sam Monson. But certainly, you can see his reasoning.
Yeah, we had on the tweet sheet, we had a response to that from Cormac, who says, I kind of believe this. He says, it's interesting / amusing watching the AFC East arms race, Miami and Buffalo really going for it, sensing a gap. If the season goes ahead, the East might be fascinating. I think he's right about that, right? I think Joe Corey, I think, called him an odds-on favorite. The Bills are an odds-on favorite to win the AFC East. And I felt like saying, wait a minute, nobody's saying they're an odds-on favorite, are they? I'm not saying that. I think it's going to be a dogfight for the Bills and the Patriots, and maybe the Dolphins will even cause some damage. What do you think, Steve?
It's very early. Certainly everybody, except for maybe the Patriots, feels like they're better now than they were 3 months ago. The Bills feel like they've at least maintained, if not gotten better. Certainly offensively, they've got to feel really good about where they're sitting. Defensively, you can say, okay, well, they got three new defensive linemen in the rotation. You don't know how those guys are going to fit or what happened. But on at least from the paper trail, it looks like they made some really good moves that kept them at the top of the league. So all of those teams, the Dolphins and the Bills, have got to feel like they're better. And with the Patriots winning 12 games last year with a really poor offense but a fantastic defense, and then losing all their defensive stars or three or four of their starters on defense and losing Tom Brady on the offense, you got to think, man, that gap is nowhere to be found anymore. So it's kind of – I'm with you, Murph. I've long said that the Patriots are not going completely away. They're going to be a handful for teams next year as well as they have been for 20 years. But Tom Brady's not there. And that's going to be interesting to see how that closes the gap between the Bills, the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Patriots.
Got an interesting show coming up tomorrow. Sal Palantonio of ESPN will join us at 1 o'clock. J.C. Treader, now the new president of the NFL Players Association. You have – quite a familiarity with him, right, Steve? He was your son's roommate at Cornell years ago.
Yeah, Luke Tasker and JC were four-year roommates. Know him well.
And Brandon Bean scheduled to join us tomorrow. We have a special announcement about a coronavirus way to help the local effort to battle coronavirus, the epidemic. He'll be joining us at about 2 o'clock tomorrow. So should be a good show, Steve. Looking forward to it tomorrow.
Me too. Look forward to it, Murph. I don't want to say this was the highlight of my day being with you, but it wasn't as bad. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was pretty good given what I have to do the rest of the day, which is nothing.
Our production assistants today, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas, Hamilton, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, Brayton Wilson, and Joe DiBiase, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow at noon with One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.